schmabulous episode of
The Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
You're going to tell this listening audience, who adores me, let's be honest.
Oh, behave.
Jeff Lutz.
I'm spreading my wing. This is me to the nth degree.
Wow! Hey! Isn't that exciting?
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Stand by for action.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It's a Wednesday edition of the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. We have a brand new guest host. He's certainly been a guest frequently, but I don't think you've ever guest hosted Joel T. Lamerno, general manager of the Wichita Thunder, right? You've never guest hosted this show.
I have.
Oh, my God.
I have. Back at the old studio with Jeff. Actually, it might have been you even. I remember the old studio, KQAM days.
That was
that's true. It was a different show.
That was before this
show. Yeah, it was a different show, but I did guest host with one of you 10, 12 years ago. I remember sitting in the seat. I remember, yeah. And the lady that ran the front desk there.
Kathy. Blonde.
Remember her, yeah.
Yep.
Tony
Dusing.
Well,
there you go. That was over in Brittany Center.
And I must have really peed someone out because I've never been brought back.
This is the first time you've been asked back. Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. The Thunder, man, it's right here a week from Friday that you open the 2024-25 season. Tell us a little bit about that. How's that looking?
Well, everyone always
asks
me.
You had to take a swig of whatever that is first.
Cherry Limeade from, can we do shameless plugs of our sponsors?
Why not?
Sonic Drive-In, Rick Bernard having a Cherry Limeade. But, you know, the number one question I get asked and have been asked multiple times in the last 2 weeks, are you ready? How are we looking? Well, I'm not ready, and I always tell everyone the same answer because there's so much to do. People don't understand, like, how much you have to do to get ready. You don't just... The players just don't show up, and all of a sudden, opening night's here, and you play a game. There is so much you got to, you know, you got to order the dashboards and do all the artwork and make all the graphics for the video board and get all the season tickets put in the system and print it and put tickets on sale and do advertising, marketing, social media, immigration, housing, travel. I could go on and on and on. So, I always tell people, I'm ready. I'm excited and ready at the first intermission of the first game. Once everything's done, everyone's in the building. And the game's going on. That's when I finally will relax. And then for team-wise, you know, we'll talk about it a little later. But, yeah, we got a lot of good guys back. We got a lot of good rookies. And then, you know, that X factor is your affiliate.
And a hockey season lasts so long now. It must feel like there's not a lot of off-season.
Well, unfortunately, there's been too much off-season for us the last couple of years because we didn't make the playoffs.
True.
You know. But realistically, yeah, hockey, I mean, even our league ends in the middle of June. So if you're playing in June, by the time you get the players out of town and you wrap everything up, it's July 1st. You got July, August, and then September. I mean, everything starts rolling around. So yeah, it's like the NASCAR season, which I'm also a closet NASCAR fan. But it's you got 2 months off in
what
NASCAR.
What aren't you a fan of? Even since you've just gotten here today, you've told me about soccer.
You've learned a little bit about soccer.
We've talked about hockey. We talked about the NFL, Major League Baseball. You like the NBA, the Sixers. Now you've divulged. You like what'd you just say?
Well, NASCAR.
Yeah,
big NASCAR.
You like NASCAR?
Love NASCAR.
So you're just a wall to wall sports fan.
I am a wall to wall sports fan. I also like LaSalle University, college basketball. There's a sport I don't watch: golf or tennis much.
There you go.
But I know enough about it to talk about it. Not tennis, though. Really, I mean. You're obviously a little bit older than me, but I'm the guy that, you know, my dad would wake us on the 4th of July for Wimbledon. So Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe, Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett. That's when I started watching, you know, tennis. You had your 5 to 7 people, Yvonne Lendl, that you knew and you followed and you watched. And now, I mean, you can't keep track. There's 180 different tennis players.
It's hard to know what's going on.
It is difficult.
Especially in tennis. I still get into golf, but... the division between the PGA and LIV kind of affected me on that. I'd like all the good players to be together. So
it affects me in the sense that I follow golf, but I don't. Even when they put the articles out about the PGA and LIV, I don't understand what they're talking about. They talk about, oh, we're going to get together for this event, or you know, this guy left this event because of it.
I think it's hard to follow.
I agree.
Very confusing. We got the baseball playoffs going on. I'm not interested. Well, I'm interested, but my team's not there, so not as much emotion. You have a team, the Phillies, and they are down now 2-1 to the Mets in New York, game four today. Right? It's today, right?
Yeah, and it is. I think there's four games today.
I think all the series are going today. And the Mets have, as I told you, the Mets just have that look about them that they are going to take this. I'd actually be a little surprised if the Phillies, with Ranger Suarez going today against Jose Quintana, I'd have to pick the Mets. I'm sorry. And what does this say? The Phillies have been so good now for a while, but they haven't been able to get to the winner's circle. What's missing?
Well, I told my wife last night when we went to bed right at the end of that Padres game that the best two teams in the National League are one game away from going out. You know, the Phillies are a team that have great pitching and great hitting, and, you know, I'll liken it to the Cubs, who I know you hate and who I also like, but at the beginning of the year, surprisingly, the Cubs hitting was great and the Cubs pitching was great. And, you know, they were in first place for a while or second place, and then they went on a huge losing streak that cost them dearly because they missed the playoffs by 6 games. And they weren't able to sustain it. The Phillies have great, great hitting, no question. They have some really great starters. They got solid bullpen, but they haven't been able to get them on the same page the last month or so. And I liken it again to the Royals. The last month of the season, all the Royals could do was pitch, 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 couldn't hit. I mean, how many games in a row did they lose right when they needed? They almost missed the playoffs. So the Phillies offense can come alive and win this tonight. And if they win it, they're going home and winning game five. But
I agree with that. Zach Wheeler will be a load.
But you said it, and I said it again. I say things I say just like you do. The Mets are just – come on. Did you think they were going to hit a two-run homer to beat the Brewers in the ninth inning of that last game?
They've been so dramatic, and they've scored so many runs. Their offense is just clicking. They've uncovered a star in Vientos. I mean, nobody can get him out. And they have Lindor, and Alonso's been hitting home runs, and they just got guys. And they've figured it out. For whatever reason, their roster isn't nearly as talented
as
the Phillies.
And you know, Phillies fans didn't want to play the Mets. I mean, Philly fans don't want Met fans in their building watching the game, for starters. Having, you know, I think you know this, but, you know, my family has had season tickets for the Phillies since 1971. My dad had 13th row behind the plate at Veterans Stadium. And then when they moved to the Citizens Bank Park, he moved up. Well, first of all, he couldn't have those seats because those seats cost now. But they moved up to the club level. So we're in the Hall of Fame club. And my dad, in his older age and his health, has passed those tickets on to my sister. So my whole family was at game two. I was on the phone with them when Castellanos hit that game winner. So, you know, it's a great atmosphere, but growing up in the Philadelphia area, I know we don't want New York people in our building.
Absolutely, New Yorkers feel the same way about Philly.
Yeah, so it's a great rivalry, and it's great for, I mean, how great is this for baseball? And I'll throw a jab at your son. You got the Mets and the Phillies. How awesome is that, right? Dodgers-Padres, which last night or this morning they were talking about probably the biggest rivalry in baseball right now. And again, you know, I was talking about my Yvonne Lendl-John McEnroe days. How about Royals-Yankees? I mean, it was Royals-Yankees-Dodgers-Phillies. Every year, 75, 76, 77, 78, 80. I was at all those games. And then you got the Indians. And who are they even playing? Oh, I'm sorry, the Guardians.
Come on now.
I know, the Guardians.
Guardians and Tigers.
Tigers, yeah, but outside of your son, who cares about that series?
Ooh, boy.
Seriously, Jeff, I mean, I don't mean it in a bad way, but does that the backseat of the playoffs?
Well, here's why they would care. Because the American League is fascinating. You've got three teams, the Guardians, Royals, and Tigers, that nobody would have thought anything about going into the season. The Twins were the prohibitive favorite in that division.
Go wind surge, right? It's all the wind surge is doing.
Right. Yeah. The Royals were coming off a disastrous season. So were the Tigers. And Cleveland wasn't very good last year either. So what's happened in the Central is pretty interesting. Now, I get it. That's probably the fourth of four, that series, Cleveland-Detroit. But one of those teams has a real good shot of going to the World Series.
And you might have just said it, didn't four of their teams that almost make the playoffs, didn't the Tigers, Tiger? Wait,
Tuesday, Tigers made it.
Right, Twins didn't.
Twins faded.
Faded. So they almost had four teams from their division make the
playoffs. Close, yes.
So, yeah, that's an intriguing matchup. And I'll tell you, my biggest thing to tell you about the Royals is in March or April, I said to myself, why is this team who has nothing giving all this money to Bobby Witt Jr., right? Because that's it. What are you going to do if he's got all your money? What are you going to do? Well, apparently.
Well, they had another $100 million that they put into free agency. They brought in people who know what to do. J.J. Piccolo knows what to do, and he's not alone. They kind of remade their entire front office. They made wise, smart decisions. Given Bobby Witt that kind of money, he's the cornerstone of that franchise for the next 12 years. I mean, they're going to be a factor for a while, in my opinion. Now, their farm system needs some work. They've got some older starters. I don't know how long Waka and Lugo can continue to pitch like this. But we'll see. The Royals, of course, game three tonight in Kansas City against the Yankees. 6:08 start. You can hear it right here on KFH. And the Yankees going with Clark Schmidt against Seth Lugo. I like the Royals in that matchup.
Well, you know, again, Royals, you're talking about the age. You know, you were talking about your Twitter stuff. You know how you're, you know, passing.
I'm off Twitter.
Off Twitter. Okay. I didn't know if that was breaking
it's
news.
It's public. We talk about everything here.
So I go back to myself as a younger, dumber person 15 years ago and look at the posts I made on Facebook. Just stupid. Like, oh, man, I'm so sick. And this is what I'm going to talk about. Ugh, I'm so tired of Salvador Perez. I had, like, posts about him. And who was the manager of that team for the Royals?
Ned Yost.
Yeah, I was one of those people that was anti-Ned Yost. And
there were a lot of those.
I just thought Salvador Perez was so overrated.
There weren't a lot of those.
Right, I know. And he swung at too many bad pitches. And look at this. Look at now. He's still there. And how many home runs he hit this year? I mean, last year, though, didn't he hit close to 50 last year?
Two years ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just amazing. You know, that's just a key part. We can have someone like that good, kind of like the Yadier Molina, to make something you could understand.
Yeah, I've never been a Royals fan, but I respect them, especially this year, because they said, you know what, we were embarrassed by last season, and we got to fix that. And even in their wildest dreams, I'm not sure they thought they'd fix it to this degree, but I think they're better than the Yankees. I think they're the best team left in the American League. Sorry, Jeff. And I'd be a little surprised if it's not the Royals and the Padres in the World Series.
Wouldn't the Royals-Phillies be cool?
Royals-Phillies would be cool, but I'm sorry, but I've almost kind of dismissed the Phillies.
Well, give it one more day.
Yeah, I know, I know. I got you.
Royals-Padres would be cool.
But, boy, the Mets just kind of brushed them off yesterday.
Yeah, they did. You know, and again, the Royals, when the series started, it's great. They got through the first series. But I thought no chance against the Yankees just because of the way they finished the season. I was like, because, you know, the Yankees can hit and the Yankees can score and the Royals can't. Well, the Royals, I mean, what was game two score? That was 6-5 wasn't it?
It was a fairly low-scoring game.
The one the Royals won. No, was it too? That's confusing. I mean, last night I fell asleep with the Padres.
It was 4-2.
Okay, 4-2. So yeah, a good combo of just timely hitting and great pitching. So
and the Yankees won 6-5 in game one.
That was the game I was talking about. Yeah, 6-5.
And the Royals haven't really even hit yet in this series, especially Bobby Witt.
Well,
Bobby Witt's going to have a big game tonight.
Well, I hope so. I gave one of my staff members permission to take off today, 10 days before the season, so she could go to the Royals game.
Wow, what a boss.
What a good boss.
What a guy.
And it was her anniversary, too. So,
maybe not such a good boss, but
yeah,
you did the right thing. Yeah. Here's what we have for you on the show today. John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant will be with us at 2:25. We'll try to get to the bottom of what's ailing KU football. And it's one of the most interesting stories of the football season so far. Now, that could be because we're right here in Kansas, but everyone had high expectations for KU, and it just hasn't come together. Mike Furches is here at 2:45. We'll talk some pop culture with Mike. I'm sure Joel T. has some pop culture things he needs to get to the bottom of. And we'll have Mike with us. And then at 3:25, our semi-annual visit with my friend Bernie Miklas, who's been in the media in St. Louis forever. He used to be at the Post-Dispatch, was there, sports columnist for, my goodness, at least 25 years. He's done radio in that market. He currently has a YouTube channel, which is outstanding. He loves to talk Cardinals, and I want to talk Cardinals today because I want to know what Bernie thinks the plan is going to be for the off season.
That Bernie Carbo you're talking about?
Bernie Carbo, former Cardinal, by the way. Made his big name with the Reds, but former Cardinal. So we're looking forward to talking with Bernie Miklas coming up in hour number two. We'll talk a lot about the Wichita Thunder. Joel T. Lamernal here, our co-host. The Thunder opens the season next Friday against?
Kansas City, October 18th, Friday. Yep.
So I used to know what your rivalries were. You got so many that could be right now because it's such a regionally predominant division that you're in. Allen for a while was a pretty strong rival when you were kind of fighting them. If you go back to the Tulsa days and the Oklahoma City days, nothing like that. Is there anything like that now?
Well, the hatred for Kansas City and Allen is real. Tulsa, it's not the same as it used to be. The hatred is there, 100% Allen, to a lesser extent Kansas City. The difference between now and then is Oklahoma City, Tulsa, it was a brawl all the time, and that's just not hockey anymore. Now, some of the purists, some of the Philly guys like me who like the rough stuff in hockey, you know, we miss that, but you know how things are today with, you know, injuries and concussions and whatnot, and the rules of the game have changed, so not as much of the fighting as there used to be when you literally beat your rival up. Now you got to beat him on the scoreboard.
You have your fans, obviously. You have a very devout Thunder fan base. But what do you guys do to try to bring in those who maybe aren't as aware of hockey, that maybe don't make it a point to check your schedule and do all that stuff that your diehards do? They're going to be there through thick and thin. How does it work in minor league hockey where you're trying to engage people that might be difficult to engage at times?
This is going to sound crazy, and it's a great question, but you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, let me go back further. 30 years ago, people were coming to our game, a bunch of guys, drink beer and watch fights. It kind of transformed more into the diehard hockey fans that want to see us win. Now, I know our fans want to see us win. I want to see us win. Nobody wants to see us win more. But, you know, again, I talk to people, my wife, clients that I see at the Wind Surge games. My feeling is that 75% of the people at the Wind Surge game don't know what the score is. Because they're there for the entertainment. They're there for the stadium. They're there to be a part of Wichita. I mean, me and my wife, the last game we went to with our kids in that last homestand, we were in the Fidelity Club, and it was the third inning all of a sudden. We missed three innings because we were talking to people, talking to Jay Miller, talking to some clients, talking to friends we know, talking to Tim Grubbs, eating delicious food. I think Thunder games are, to an extent, our fans, a portion of those are now that type of person that isn't really necessarily there to make sure we win. They're there to have a good time, see some goals, see some fights, see us win, but enjoy the entertainment. We've done a lot of things differently to get more atmosphere to game, and I use the Wind Surge Stadium as an example all the time. There's so many things to do at the Wind Surge Stadium. I don't have that room to do that, so we're just trying to create more stuff like last year, we made an entire section of our arena, 100-person glass suite, and a kids zone, and a party zone. We moved a bunch of stuff down there. Over 50% of hockey fans now are female. Females, families, kids, looking for something fun to do. We are very kid-focused friendly right now. Kid-friendly focused. Our biggest event last year was Bluey. I don't know if you even know who these people are, but Bluey is do you know who Bluey is?
No.
He's an Australian.
Oh, yeah. Now
cartoon character. Okay, well, we had Bluey. We're the first team in hockey to have Bluey out to a game. And the line around the concourse went all the way around, three quarters around the entire night for 3 hours. So we're having – I have a load of home games in November. I have 15 home games between now and December 5th. We have Bluey coming in November. We have Paw Patrol coming in November. We have Blippi, another kids thing, coming in November. Families, kids, you got to
get the kids there. You get the parents.
You got to do the draw. I mean, and we have other stuff. I mean, we're going to do our $3 beer and country concert night again the night before Thanksgiving, which was massive for us last year. So we're going to hit all of the demographics. We've got a big church tonight. We haven't announced yet, but for the people that are very, you know, I don't know what the word is, religious, church friendly, because I am too. But there's a event we're going to be putting on that we think is going to be massive.
There you go.
For all demographics of people. So
we'll get more into the Thunder and their personnel a little bit later in the show, but we'll take a break right now. When we return, we'll talk KU football. John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant will be our guest. KU off to a very slow start, as you know. We'll try to figure out why with John next.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
All right. We are back. We welcome in John Kirby, editor, publisher of Jayhawk Slant, covers KU football extremely closely. John, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. Joe, how you guys doing?
Well, we appreciate it. We know it's a busy time. Even though KU has an off week, does any team in the country need a bye week more than the Jayhawks right now?
Well, I mean, they probably need a bye week from two things, and that's one, physically to get better, because they are pretty banged up. I mean, they were playing some kids there in the second half against Arizona State who didn't even travel on the previous road game. So, I mean, they're banged up. And then mentally, I mean, they've got to just get back and just figure out what's going on. I mean, you know, I knew going into the week to the Arizona State game, you know, I had been told by several people it was the best week of practice they had. And, you know, it's not like they went out to Arizona State and played bad. So, you know, I think what you worry about, Bob, a little bit is now 1-5, you know, for a team that's predicted to be near the top of the standings before the season started, and to lose games the way they're losing. I mean, they're not getting blown out. I mean, they're shooting some of those losses. They're the better team. They're more physical. They're pushing teams around. In the loss, I mean, they pushed Illinois around. Illinois is a good football team. So, you know, I think the big thing is they've just got to sit down and figure out from here, you know, get healthy and figure out what's going on in the program.
John Kirby with us from Jayhawk Slant. You're right. I mean, these losses have all been close. They've all been decided late. It's as if KU can't figure out how to stop teams in the final 2 minutes of a half. They have Houston coming up. Houston, as I predicted, with Willie Fritz as their coach, that's an improving football team. They're certainly not world beaters at this point. But Houston, K-State, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, that's a tough stretch of games.
Yeah, they're going to hit the gauntlet there. You know, obviously, Houston, you've got to win that game. Okay, I mean, you know, Houston's changed quarterbacks last week and looked pretty good. And, you know, they beat TCU at TCU, which, I mean, I think that was probably surprising to everybody. I don't think anybody saw that coming, especially with the way TCU threw the ball around against KU. So, I mean, you know, Houston will come in, a little bit of renewed energy. You know, it's at Arrowhead Stadium, so you sit here and you wonder about, you know, the crowd. And you know, who's going to make that drive to Arrowhead and what the enthusiasm is with the fan base. And after that, man, the schedule gets hard. It really does. I mean, there's some pretty good teams after that. But, you know, Bob, I go back to this. Look at Illinois. KU's got the ball in their hands with a chance to win the game at the end of the fourth quarter. UNLV, they've got the ball in their possession with a chance to win the game. West Virginia, they're at West Virginia, who's undefeated in the conference right now. They've got West Virginia down 11 points with 4.5 minutes to play. They blow that game. You know, TCU's a one-point game in the fourth quarter. Last week against Arizona State, they give up the drive with 2 minutes to go to lose it. But still, they had the ball at the end of the game with a chance to win. I don't know that I've ever covered in 25 years for KU a season like this, because it's either been hot or cold. KU's either had some really good teams, okay, or they had a bunch of bad teams that you just don't see them be competitive. But this is a weird year because they're competitive in every game they're playing in.
John, do you follow the NFL as well, I'm sure?
Yeah, you know, I try to keep my eye on it. Obviously, with college football, you know, you're so busy during the week,
sure,
that you do get Sundays off, but, you know, you're pretty focused on the team you cover and the conference.
Okay, so I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and just hearing this conversation you've had, I feel like we're talking about the Bengals right now because, you know, everyone had high expectations for the Bengals, and we can't close a team out. I mean, you get a fumble in overtime against the Ravens, and then you miss a field goal to lose in overtime, and I feel like this is kind of the KU way. And, you know, all the media, you know, after the performance of the Bengals, they're still making it seem like Lamar Jackson's awesome and Joe Burrow lost the game for him. And the feeling that everyone says, well, the Bengals just are, they're just not a good team. That's it. Is that how you feel about this KU football team, or maybe they're getting a bum rap? Maybe they are better than their record indicates. Do you feel that way?
Oh, I think they're better. Yeah, I think KU's actually I'll tell you this right now. I look down this thing now. I don't think they'll win in Manhattan. But, I mean, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado. I mean, these are teams Kansas can beat. I mean, Kansas could be easily. We could be sitting here talking about a 5-1 team, okay? They've got a bunch of seniors. They've got some talent. You know, until Arizona State, I will tell you that physically – they had out-physicaled every team that they've played. I thought Arizona State was actually pretty physical. So Kansas has all the ingredients. They do some good things on offense. The defense here now lately has been a little bit of a question mark these last two games. But to me, Kansas is a scary team. I'll tell you this. I was talking with a guy who's very close to one of KU's recent opponents. He's inside their program. And he told me before the game and after the game when they played KU, he goes, we still think they're pretty good. So, I mean, when you look at personnel, when coaches break down things on film, I'll guarantee at BYU, when Kansas goes to BYU, I'll guarantee at BYU is going to say, God, hey, we can't take this guy lightly. Because if this is the game Kansas does put things together, they can beat you.
John Kirby with us from Jayhawk Slant. We're talking about KU football. So you mentioned a bunch of seniors on this team. They're in the midst of a 5-game losing streak. They had very, very high hopes going into the season. What's the mental frame of mind, in your opinion? Because to me, when you have this many seniors, it's their last hurrah together. All the expectations, the high hopes, the combination of what's still left on their schedule with 3 ranked teams coming up very shortly. How difficult is it? I mean, I agree with you that the talent level's there. Does the mental frame of mind match that now?
Well, I haven't been around the team this week because they're in the bye week and they're doing no media this week. Okay, so I don't know what's going on. I know that today I believe they're doing a scrimmage, but they're going to get a lot of the young guys some snaps in their scrimmage today just to, you know, give them a chance to show what they can do, kids that aren't playing a lot. But like I said, last week going into the Arizona State game, I heard that was the best week of practice they had. Okay, so that's on a, 4-game losing streak. So they're still able to put together a good practice and go out to Arizona State and play a pretty good football game against a, you know, pretty decent team. We'll find out how good Arizona State is here in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So to this point, KU still come out and played with a lot of effort and stayed in these games. I think the magic number, Bob, for me is, the minute that they're out of bowl contention, okay, I mean, they're trying to go to back, you know, 3 straight bowls for the first time in the history of their program. I think if they get that 7th loss, okay, I think that's when you're going to sit here and start questioning, okay, what do kids play for?
Hey, John, you made a comment that I wrote down at the beginning, and you just said it again. And I'm kind of going to get your professional opinion of this. So I run a hockey team here in Wichita, and I can't tell you how many times my coach or someone has told me it's the best week of practice. And I've learned that every time someone tells me it's the best week of practice, we actually lose that next weekend's game. Do you ever find that to be a trend down there when you hear that from people? You know, maybe a team that's struggling, oh, we had a great week of practice. Do you take that with a grain of salt?
No. No, well, here's the deal. I wasn't saying that they had a great week of practice. I said it was their best week of practice they've had all year. So I just know in a comparison state to their previous 5 weeks, that was their best week of practice. And I thought that was interesting that I had heard that from a couple people, because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, is this when we start hearing the practice isn't that great? Is this when we start hearing guys are hanging their heads? You know, is this when we start seeing guys that realize, hey, you know, we had all these preseason expectations and we're falling short of them. Do you stop? Do you see the effort stop? But it didn't. They played hard against Arizona State. I mean, you know, it was 104 degrees at kickoff out there. I mean, it was a tough place to play, and they left it all out on the field. It just came up short. But the effort was there, and they played hard. So the question is going to be now is how many more times do I hear, hey, that was our best week of practice? My guess is until they can string some wins together, my guess is we don't hear that very much.
Talking here with John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. So, obviously, a lot of the success of KU is pinned to its quarterback, Jalen Daniels, who really started slowly this year. He's gotten better. He had a very good game in Tempe against Arizona State. How much do you think he's turned a corner now? And is that more like the Jalen Daniels you think we'll see from here on out?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, he'll, you know, when they face Houston, I don't know how good Houston's defense is. I've watched them a couple times. They're okay, you know. I don't know if that game against TCU was an anomaly or just what is Houston. Obviously, when they go to Manhattan, they're going to face a very aggressive defense and a good defense there. So, you know, it'll be interesting. The last two games, West Virginia and Arizona State, are games that Jalen Daniels started to look better. Okay, I mean, listen, they averaged 30 points a game the last two games against West Virginia and Arizona State with about 850 yards of offense in the two games. That's not a problem. Okay, when you're scoring 30 points and averaging two games and you're putting up 425 yards average offense a game, I mean, you should be in games or winning games.
I hear you. KU with a bye week this week. They play Houston coming up next Saturday. Off to a 1-5 start, a tough schedule ahead. One of the most fascinating stories in college football, in my opinion. John, thanks for coming on to talk about it. We appreciate your insight.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
John Kirby, Jayhawk Slant. Here is Mike Furches. We're going to talk some pop culture. Mike's hard to reach. Not getting on your texts the way you used to, my friend. What's up, Mike?
I'm sitting here, and I hear you introduce me, and then the call dropped. It's like, what in the world happened? So,
we were just lamenting that I had trouble reaching you today. You were you're a busy man.
Well, sometimes I got I'm going through all this medical stuff, so that's always a lot of fun. And I've never even played hockey. What do you think about that? Listening to the show this morning, I could have been beat up even worse.
It's old. That's what we talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know Joel Lamerno from the Thunder?
I don't know him. I know of him because
I know of you,
Mike.
I've
been the big. Same with you. A lot of respect from people like Johnny Freedom and others that have known the game. And then, of course, being such a big Wings fan, there are so many things that's taken place between the two and the collaborations over the years. So I'm looking forward to the hockey season. I think you've done a great job, and I love all those little things that get people into the seats. So,
mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, let's delve into a little pop culture. I'd like to know where you want to start today, because with a kitchen remodel – and the things I'm doing at the moment, pop culture is not completely on my radar. So what have you been into lately?
Well, I've seen most of the big ones that are out. The best one that I've seen, I think I mentioned it once before, was The Wild Robot. It's an animated film. It's very, very good, very entertaining, and they find ways. I
don't think
you've
seen it yet.
I think I was getting ready to see it is what it was. But the animation genre, when it's done and done well, it's not just for children. And I wish people would understand that this one here, The Wild Robot, is an excellent movie with the underhidden tones that can point to adult humor as well as child humor. There's a lot of darkness that deals with death. You think of a children's movie that deals with death, there's not many of them. But this one, I'd say, is for older children, like at least 8, 9 in that ballpark. But it's a wonderful, wonderful movie, one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And then on the backside of that, I saw Megalopolis, which no one's talking about, the Francis Ford Coppola movie. No one's talking about it because it's just, it's bizarre. It's one of those super bizarre Brazil-type movies that, to me, was just not very entertaining. And when you have to spend most of your time trying to figure a movie out, that's something else. And then the one, Bob, that I saw.
Yeah, I can't even figure out the synopsis for it. I'm trying to read it, and I've lost interest.
The word, I don't know if I can share what the word was in Hollywood about where Francis Ford Coppola was at when they were making this movie, but it was not on set. He was someplace enjoying life to the fullest without being on set as he should have been. So, and then the one that a lot of people are talking about is Joker Filet Adieu. And that's a different – the movie is probably getting worse buzz from fans than any movie in a long time. And I didn't find it to be that bad, but I'm kind of weird in that
way. What's the movie you just mentioned?
Joker, the Joker from the Batman.
It's getting panned by everybody.
Yes, it is. But I didn't find it that bad. The weird thing of it is, if you can imagine an animated thriller psychodrama musical. It's kind of like an adult variation of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The music makes no sense in it. But the story, if you remember the Joker with River Phoenix's version that was done, the interpretation and the look at mental illness was rather fascinating, and this takes it kind of a step farther. It is not a style of movie that fits in with the genre of movie for people to go enjoy it, and I think what I was looking at for this weekend, they have reduced the seats available to see that movie drastically. I think it'll be in one smaller theater, and it's not in any of the larger theaters anymore after 1 week. And that's kind of blowing expectations away.
Well, Mike, I have a 9-year-old daughter, so I appreciate your take on The Wild Robot and you saying, you know, maybe 7, 8, 9-year-olds. I was telling my wife I had a talk with my 9-year-old in the car yesterday about boys and dating and whatnot. It got pretty in-depth, so maybe the death topic is next. The last movie I saw at the theater a month ago was In-N-Out 2. What did you think of that one?
I love the In-N-Out stories. I love what they've done with that. The animation, and again, it's the same type of thing. If you saw that, you know what I'm talking about. The way that they can inject adult humor for adults to think about that's can kind of be left at the discretion of the parent or the adult to discuss those with the child if they want to. My training's in psychology, so I'm very much aware of the fact that we have to be careful of some of those kind of things. But I think In-N-Out is a fabulous, wonderful, fun, enjoyable series for both the adults and the kids. In fact, it's one of my top 2 or 3 favorite animated series. And it may be number one, In-N-Out. So,
talking with our friend Mike Furches, Pop Culture. There's a movie I read a little bit about, and I see that it's now out. It's called Lee, and it's about a war correspondent, a photographer, Lee Miller, and it stars Kate Winslet, who is, in my view, one of the top 5 actors of our time. Do you know much about this movie? And it sounds extremely interesting.
Yeah, I have become kind of intrigued about war correspondents. And if you remember me talking about that with the movie Civil War, which is now streaming. So anything that is I love the concept of journalism. I love journalism done from a journalistic perspective. But one of the things that you just never think about is war correspondents that are there doing the story. So that premise alone, after seeing the Civil War movie that was out here just last year, intrigued me enough to want to see this as soon as it comes out. So I'm looking really forward to it, Bob, just to see what they do with it.
Well, on your topic there, you know, it's been in the news. I read an article just about 2 weeks ago about the situation in Israel and Palestine and the number of reporters over there that have been killed during that. I actually have a question that is time relevant to you. It's going to be on the opposite spectrum of the animated kids movies. Are you familiar with the Terrifier series?
Oh, I was just with my wife the other day at the Spirit Shops off of West Kellogg, and I was complaining because Terrifier didn't have blood splattered all over him. I'm very much
all right. So you've seen them.
I've seen one and two, and I'm looking forward to the third. It's kind of what I would call a shock gore horror, in a fun way. There's the gore horror that's done towards just brutal. I don't care about seeing it, but Terrifier. Have you been to the Spirit Shops? He's one of the featured.
I haven't yet, but I did see the skit on Saturday Night Live about the Spirit Shop last week.
Okay. I was talking to Max on the phone earlier. Saturday Night Live is back to being good stuff, in my opinion. So, but the Terrifier should have blood splattered all over him. And what a perfect place. It's a perfect place to go visit for the Halloween season. I love it. Are you into the Terrifier? Being a hockey guy, I would assume that maybe you are, but I don't know.
I have seen Terrifier 1 and 2, and I've told my best friend, well, give him his name, we call him Poppy, but you have to see these movies for the amount of gore. And he finally texted me the other day that he just watched one, because I texted him the article about Terrifier 3. Did you see the premiere story about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've seen it.
People walking out of the theater throwing up due to the violence.
Doesn't that seem like something I'd enjoy.
It's a good family film. I'm going to take my 9-year-old. Well,
there you go.
I was getting ready to say that would be a fun time to buy the theater. You can buy the theater for like $100 and make tickets available and use it for a fun get together for all the radio listeners and stuff.
Final moments here with Mike Furches. Mike, I'm curious to know what you think of my decision. And I went back and forth, and I struggled with it. I'm not going to act like it came easily. But I'd been thinking about it for at least a couple years. I just made a decision that Twitter X didn't bring me enough to overcome what it did, what the negative effects that it has. What are your thoughts? Did I make the right move? Is there a right move? Is it just an individual thing? I don't think you're on Twitter a whole lot.
No, I'm not.
Why, and what do you think of it?
I think, I started a book probably about 5 years ago on the interaction of social media. When I started the Virtual Pew, it was done, and it's not per se just a straight religious thing, but it was a situation to try to do things that's kind of gone astray. But it was looking at social media, and the book I was writing was looking at social media and how you do ministry there. And I, after about six chapters, I just quit because it changes so much. The problem is the social experiment, I think is the name of the movie that's on Netflix. When the creators of the format are not on the format and don't allow their children on it, that says something. And we can have disagreements, but the key is knowing where your levels and where your boundaries are at and not crossing your boundaries. And if something like that causes you to cross boundaries, it causes you to be angry, or it causes you to get upset, I think it's, I admire you and respect you for doing it. And even the interactions that we've had, Bob, I generally respect honesty and communication. And sometimes that means, doing something you don't necessarily want to do. And I would have I'm not on Twitter much, or X, or whatever it's called, because Facebook's all I can handle. I'm on there too much. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it all can be a quagmire. So what I'm trying to do on Facebook now is to be more lighthearted and entertaining, and maybe allow my sense of humor to take over instead of my anger and concern. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. That'd be a good vlog for us to do that we could do together, the contrasting guys that finding ways to get along. It's like I quote the prophet Rodney King. I quote the prophet Rodney King all the time. Can't we all just get along? And there's so much truth to that.
It'd be a wonderful thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Well, thank you, Mike. So, we always appreciate your time, and we'll catch up next week.
Next week. Later, guys.
All right. Mike Furches talking some pop culture. It's Bob Lutz, Joel Lamerno here today, your co-host, The Bob and Jeff Show. KFH Radio. We'll take a break, come back and get more into the Wichita Thunder and its roster and players a week from Friday, opening night for the Thunder against Kansas City. Hour number two will also include an interview with my friend Bernie Miklas, a longtime media guy in St. Louis, and you'll indulge me as we try to figure out the Cardinals. That's all ahead, hour number two. Stay with us.